The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Anthony, when last did you see a bear?
It's been a long time, Benji. I have to be honest and admit that to you.
Okay, well, never mind.
We don't see them roaming around here too frequently.
Yeah, just some people who are a bit bare, but other than that, no.
Well, I wasn't going to go there.
What can you do? It is a Monday afternoon. And unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, no bear news in Israel. Lots of stuff going on.
As always, I mean, we're already well into our week. You know, we're into this week just before Rosh Hashanah, which is, you know, Slichot early in the morning, and the shofar's being blown. A lot of people are walking around bleary-eyed from having got up too early in the morning. And, of course, now, in fact, all the school kids have gone back to school, seeing as the school year finally began yesterday, the beginning of September. So lots of happy parents. Lots of children kind of wondering why it's worth going back just to school just for 1 week when we've already got holidays next week.
Well, if there wasn't a children's refrain, I would suspect that would have to be it. Yeah, I guess it is a bit strange. You know, in South Africa, we're very used to people going to school in January or February and ending is December. The rest of the world finds it super strange.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the rest of the world, but certainly the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, it's not a January to December situation, but it is straight after the summer holidays. So now we're kind of ending our summer holidays. Even though it's still pretty hot, but the summer holidays are certainly coming to an end. And that, for most kids around the world, means get back to school, to the calendar, to the new school year. And this year, fortunately, the school year seems to have started almost without incident. Usually, there's a lot of brinkmanship that goes on around the start of the school year when teachers are going on strike, threatening that they won't open the school year on time, trying to get better conditions, better pay, whatever. But this year, fortunately, there's been none of that. And more than 2 million Israeli school children returned back to school yesterday. So as I say, it's been a relatively smooth transition back to the school year, but very disrupted because of the fact that only next week is Rosh Hashanah, so they're back to school just for 1 week. Then it's holidays for, I think, 4 weeks in a row. Well, certainly Rosh Hashanah and then Yom Kippur the week after that. And then once we hit Sukkot, then there's actually a week-long holiday until finally the teachers will go, we're going to be able to finally learn something once Sukkot is over and there'll be a little bit more normality around the study period.
Yeah, truly, that's just torturing Israeli kids, actually. No wonder, you know, wonder nobody liked Israel and the rest of the world. We torture kids. Everyone can see that. Anthony, what else is going on in Israel besides sending the kids to school?
Well, the thing that's interesting that's come up today is the fact that Israeli farmers, a group of Israeli farmers, has turned up at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and they filed a war crimes complaint against top Hamas officials for what they call fire kite terror, which they refer to, took place during the recent Gaza border crisis. And in fact, an organization called Shurat Adin has taken on this particular case on behalf of the Israeli farmers. And Shurat Adin has filed a complaint which says that the International Criminal Court would find blatant violation of the Rome Statute, which prohibits the murder of non-combatants, the destruction of civilian property for unlawful purposes, and the use of civilians as human shields. And this particular motion has been filed not only against Hamas, but indeed personally against the leaders of Hamas, who Shurat Adin claim have violated the Rome Statute, and as such that they've called upon the International Criminal Court to launch a criminal probe for war crimes into these individuals and into this organization. And not only has it been filed on behalf of Israeli farmers, but a group of 50,000 concerned individuals worldwide have actually also accused they've tried to turn the tables on the Israel critics who have accused the IDF of war crimes by participating along with the farmers in this particular filing against Hamas. So it's going to be interesting to see how the International Criminal Court in The Hague responds to this motion that's been filed against Hamas for the recent kite terror, the incendiary kite terror that's taken place. My suspicion is that it's probably not going to go very far. But ironically, the fact that the Palestinian Authority has been admitted as a party to the International Criminal Court is what has enabled this particular motion to be filed. And, you know, it's ironic because the Israeli government was very much opposed to the admission of the Palestinian Authority to the International Criminal Court. But the fact that the Criminal Court actually decided to admit the Palestinian Authority is exactly what's enabled this motion to be filed. So even though I'm not particularly optimistic that the motion is going to go anywhere, I think it is some sort of an example that's being used just to try to somehow turn the tables on all of those people who've tried to file criminal cases against the IDF and against other Israeli government organizations in the past, accusing them of war crimes and accusing them of various other unlawful activities against the Palestinians. So this is just an interesting different side to the same coin. And it'll be interesting to see how the International Criminal Court responds to this particular filing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a danger that I think the Palestinians were warned about when they did this. So perhaps they'll be a little bit more circumspect.
It does potentially come back to bite them. And so the other piece that I wanted to just talk about is the visit of the Filipino president, Rodrigo Duterte.
This guy's nuts, Anthony. He's insane.
Well, apparently he is a little crazy. That's what they say. I mean, I can't personally vouch for him, but certainly Prime Minister Netanyahu possibly could, because he met with Duterte earlier today during the course of his four-day visit. Yeah, I mean, we know that Duterte comes with a huge a pre-existing position on various crazy things, and we know that he has said some things in the international press which really cannot be defended, not by anybody or any possible way. And of course, he's been waging this huge crime. It's a war, literally a war against the drug lords in the Philippines. And he's been accused of, you know, being responsible for the deaths of thousands of people as a result of this particular war that he's been raging against. He's been waging against the drug cartels and the drug lords in the Philippines. But be that as it may, I mean, you know, setting the individual aside for a moment, because you're right, I mean, he is a little crazy. But setting him aside for a moment, and let's just look at the Philippines as a country and the relationship that the Philippines has with Israel. I think it's first of all interesting just to note that the Philippines was one of those countries that did actually admit refugees, Jews running away from the Shoah during the Second World War, and that's certainly been recognized during the course of this visit by Duterte. By the way, this visit is the first time that a Filipino president has ever visited Israel. And so I think it's probably long overdue, even though, you know, we might have been happier if it had been made by someone with a little better of a track record than Duterte. But there has been diplomatic relations. There have been diplomatic relations between Israel and the Philippines for the last 60 years already.
Well, the Philippines actually voted for Israel in the original UN resolution. What's it? 181.
Absolutely, in the Palestine Participation Plan, 1947 resolution at the United Nations, and that's a very important point, that the Philippines was actually the only country from Southeast Asia to do so. So that's another reason why Israel will be forever indebted to the Philippines for supporting that particular motion. But having said all of that, and, you know, bringing things to the current day, it was interesting that Duterte mentioned that he wanted to thank the Israeli government for help, which was not set out. It's not clear exactly what the help was that was given, but clearly there was some form of support support given by the Israeli government to the Philippines in some important work that it was doing. And it would obviously be quite interesting to find out a little bit more information about what that help is.
There was an interesting case of the Israeli army and people going in after some of those typhoons, or was it earthquake, one of those natural disasters. And I think there was a lot that was given on that side of things.
So there has certainly been humanitarian aid that Israel has given to the Philippines over the years, but I suspect that the help that the president was referring to on this occasion is help of the sort that can't necessarily be spoken about in public. And so it just kind of gets the imagination running as to what that help might have been, whether it be military aid or whether it be the supply of arms or whether it even be potentially some work that Israel did to help in the war that the Philippines is waging against these criminal activities. But if we just kind of fast forward to the current day, what's probably marks the relationship between Israel and Philippines, at least from an Israeli point of view, is the number of Filipino care workers who now work in Israel. And I'm told that they number somewhere around 30,000 Filipino nationals who've come to Israel, most of them legally, but some of them also illegally, to work in the care sector in Israel, looking after infirm and elderly people who obviously need that help and who can't really find it amongst local Israelis. I mean, it's a type of work that's very difficult, and the Filipinos have a real empathy for the elderly and for the infirm in terms of looking after them. And even Prime Minister Netanyahu's father was looked after by a Filipino worker, and he mentioned that to the president when he met with him earlier today. So certainly that's one of the key things that defines Israel's relationship. And in fact, one of the things that the prime minister decided to do was to take away some of the regulation that surrounds the import of those foreign workers and to make it a lot cheaper now for Israelis to be able to employ foreign Filipino workers legally who come here and work in the care sector. So that's certainly one of the defining matters. And of course, Israel is very eager to tap into the huge Christian travel market that exists within the Philippines to try to encourage more tourists to come from the Philippines, particularly the evangelical groups and Christian tourists who would like to come and examine Christian roots here in the Holy Land. So that seems to have been the bulk of the work that's been going on between the Philippines and Israel during the four-day period that the president is here visiting Israel.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, and we'll chat soon. Thanks for giving us the update.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great week ahead.
Anthony Reich there with the Israel Report.